So you saw the end product of the student working within a structure, working towards the reward, because that's what we go to work for. You know, we know we're going to get our pay packet. For people with autistic spectrum disorders, it's going to have to be immediate. It's going to have to be on a daily basis. And what we're trying to do is phase out that immediate reward for Andre. And you've seen the beginning start of the process, which is very clear, setting out what you're going to do, what the tasks are, and who's going to work with you. And then gradually, over the process of children's time with us, fading that out. But central to all of that is, where did this come from? We've got two drivers in autism. We've got the government driving us in the sense of, if we want to raise children's achievements, we've got to look at the national curriculum, we've got to include children in mainstream, and we've got to give them that breadth and balance that we know all children have a right. And then we've got the research that is telling us a different story. And for you as parents, and for me and all those people that work in education, it's a compromised situation. So each learning environment is going to come up with what they perceive to be the right way of working. And we've got to accept that, in fact, there's going to be a whole range of different environments that are going to be right for different children. But what drove us was the number of children who were being referred who had failed in other environments. It wasn't working for them. And when we looked at the research was actually saying, this is why it doesn't work for them. There's a high prevalence of, you know, anxiety and mood problems among children with autism and Asperger's syndrome. And this is quite a large sample that was carried out in Canada, comparing typically developing children with the ASD population. So when you're looking at a sample of kind of over 1,000, that's a large study for autism. And what they identified, that in this age range of 9 to 14, we saw an increase in sleep disturbance. We saw an increase in children who were changing their appetite, either overeating or undereating as a reaction to the stressors. A reduced energy level, becoming much more lethargic, much less motivated by things that either the family did or the school did. An increase in repetitive questioning, you know, things that they would have done normally within the context of family and school now become a source of anxiety. An increase in stereotypic behaviours. And the higher functioning, the higher IQ, the more these symptoms of anxiety and mood disorders were prevalent. And yet if you look at the national curriculum, we haven't got anything that recognises this. And yet this was the cluster of students that were being referred to us. Not everybody, but a majority of students coming through. We also know, if you look at the adult population, people who are in NAS provision, that there is a high risk of depressive illness, disturbance in adolescence, in adulthood, as these young people are coming to grips with what it means to have autism, and their struggle of making sense of joining kind of what we perceive as the typical world. And yet nothing has been done in the delivery of the national curriculum that tunes into that. Have you had John Clements here? You know John Clements? Okay, well, this is John Clements, who's a clinical psychologist that works at school, now decamped to California, thank you, lucky man, and just comes over periodically. But his work is really influential because he's a practitioner as well as a clinician. And he's saying that lack of well-being is a problem. Of all the cases that he sees, and pulling together the research from around the world, things from Carol Gray, things from Tony Atwood, this is a key feature that follows through, this loss of well-being. You know, I can't actually engage in what I'm meant to be doing because I feel so low, my sense of self is reduced. And what we see in our adolescents, and this kind of kicks in at about 9, 10, 11-year-olds, is the fight and flight systems are more motivated than the pleasure. You know, fear of engaging in things is a stronger driver than the pleasure drive. And yet in typically developing children, it's the other way around. As they become more aware of what they're good at, you know, I'm the person that's good at PE, I'm the good person that's good at modern foreign languages, I'm the person that's good at whatever, they start getting this enhanced view, you know, I'm King Ping and I know it all. And that's an interesting scenario in secondary school, because that's when they start to challenge the teachers, you know, I actually know more than you, and challenge you in the family. And in autism, you see the reverse. You don't see this driver for I'm okay coming through in a way that we seem to be innately wired to look at the things that we do well first rather than the things that we find difficult. He's identified again, pulling the strands through from the people that are researching and writing, that their thoughts and memory are dominated by negative themes. So they remember the things that have gone wrong. They remember those times when something happened. So it's gloom, doom, and distress and anger. And their ability to tie into cycles is actually reduced. So we start getting into a cycle now about Christmas. So if you're the mum in the family and you're doing shopping, the cycle is, oh my goodness, here we go. And if you're the child, your cycle is, this is the time of year when I get goodies. You know, and if I radiate to the family and spread it around that, you know, I'm such a good person, I'm going to get the bike or the computer or whatever I've fantasized about. And our children can't do that. They can't associate, you know, the good times in our lives, the Christmas, the holidays, the birthdays, with positive memories. We need to pull that back for them. And routines and rituals take on a really drug-driven quality, so it's not unusual for our families to experience quite a lot of stress at this time of year. Either because then, you know, brighter functioning students aren't going to get what they perceive they ought to be getting, and children with more complex learning difficulties just not understanding, you know, the busyness, the light, the freneticism of our own activity, the changes that are taking place in the house. And again, you know, when I'm talking to you, I just want you to remember the introduction where I'm saying I'm talking in generalities, because every child is so unique. It's hard to hear a story that may not respond and may not be about your child or about the child in the context of the family that you know. So just hang on to that if it doesn't make sense to you.